Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And welcome to the first of season 22's Second Helpings. This is where we discuss the episode of Last Chance Kitchen from this week. And then if we have any guest interviews, we'll be publishing them with our Second Helpings. And this week, we have not only an episode of Last Chance Kitchen to review, but also our interview with the one, the only, the king of Riz himself, Joe Flam. So stick around for us to for that conversation with him. But first, Bits, let's get into Last Chance Kitchen this week.
Nancy, it was a little womp. It was a little like nobody kind of did it correctly. And as a result, I was left, we had a lot of people that just sort of lost or got through on a technicality. That's my amuse-bouche reaction to this.
Yeah. My amuse-bouche is I really like the wild card of it. Like Sue was really fun last season. I like that Tom's doing
totally.
This. I think two was maybe gilding the lily. But like it almost felt like, okay, why not just put them in the I don't know. Having two chefs in Last Chance Kitchen to me just felt like overkill. It's sort of like what we were talking about on the LA Food Pod of like sometimes changing the rules for no reason doesn't actually add any entertainment.
Yeah.
And I think adding two new chefs in Last Chance Kitchen does not give an increased value to adding one alternate in Last Chance Kitchen, which I do like. I like this format.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think we needed the third. It was a very swift third, and now we're
so
gone.
Swift.
I mean, I don't know how long, though, we're going to be sustaining this, like, trio situation.
Yeah,
or whether,
we'll see. Well,
you know.
Let's rewind and introduce these two people. So Tom says this year in Last Chance Kitchen – we're going to have two more Canadians, specifically Canadians. It's also like, why are they out like doing an outsized proportion of Canadians on Last Chance Kitchen, but not in the main cast?
Right.
Like, I feel like they could have had two Canadians in the main cast. They didn't need to only have one.
Yeah.
Although maybe I guess there is Top Chef Canada. I don't know, dude. But pretty much we learn that there are two Canadian chefs in the Top Chef Kitchen waiting for Mimi to compete for the next spot in the main cast of chefs. The two chefs are Samuel Olayinka and Ying Gao. Both of them have a ton of experience. One's from British Columbia. One's from Vancouver. I thought Vancouver was in British Columbia, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think it is. I wonder if it just is sort of like a – for the non-Vancouver person, it was the easiest proxy.
Yeah. Good point. But anyway, so these two chefs enter the kitchen. Mimi walks in, and it's a three-way competition, baby.
Woo.
Woohoo. So their task was it was sort of a replay of the quickfire. They each had to grab one ingredient from the pantry. And then the twist is that they all have to make dishes with all three ingredients. So we had eggplant, we had squash, and then what was the third ingredient? Was it a mushroom?
Eggplant, squash, and mushroom.
Okay, yeah. So what did you think of their cooking styles? What were your impressions of these guys?
I mean, I was a little distracted, like I said, and like immediately launched into this episode that two out of the three didn't even get everything on the plate.
Yeah.
Like, did Mimi – I guess Mimi technically got everything, but it was not – oh, she technically got everything, but he couldn't find the eggplant. She had to, like, confirm that the eggplant was on there. So you had Ying, who missed two ingredients. She didn't get squash or eggplant. And then you had Mimi, who, like, maybe got eggplant, but Tom didn't notice it. And then you had Sam, who sort of was the only one who did – the challenge,
yeah,
and celebrated all three of those things by not, you know, masking or pushing them to the side for a protein, and then also actually used all three ingredients. So it was, I gotta admit, like, I was a little bit checked out after that. I was like, okay, I now feel like this is a bit of a runaway thing for Sam.
Yeah. I am really impressed by Sam. Like, I think he has the temperament of one of the main competitors. Yeah. Like, he came in prepared, ready to go. I think that he just impressed me. So I'm really excited to see how he performs in Last Chance Kitchen. And I think his dish not – I do think that he won by default. But I think that
it looked
if
good.
The other two had completed their dishes, I still think his would have been the best and was the most impressive of the three dishes. So
I would agree with that. I could have done with two people going at this stage. Like, I think it would have been fine to just continue with Sam.
I bet it won't last long.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. All in all, very excited for Last Chance Kitchen. I like always that they kind of do a riff on the main show challenge.
Yes.
So that'll be fun to kind of watch over the eps. But yeah, more to come on the Sam front. And I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So let's, you know, not put this off any longer. Listeners, stick around for our hilarious interview with Joe Flam on this week's episode of Second Helping. Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And I can't even believe it, have such an incredible guest today. We're just going to jump right into it for this week's Second Helping. Without further ado, might I introduce South Side of Chicago native culinary director of the Day Off Group, overseeing Rosemary Boulevard Steakhouse, and most recently, Il Carciofo. He has worked at every famous restaurant in Chicago, including with Stephanie Izzard of Girl and the Goat and Top Chef fame. Most importantly to us, he is the winner of Top Chef season 15 in Colorado. Today on the pod, we have Joe Flam. Welcome.
Woo.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
We're so glad to have you. We're obviously huge fans. It's funny, Nancy and I mean, we talk about Top Chef a lot, both on this podcast and by ourselves. But you are, like, unequivocally in our mind, like, the Riz King of Top Chef.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, wow.
We really want to unpack that with you this episode because I think let's start at the beginning. I'm getting ahead of myself. So obviously we know from your time on Top Chef, your grandmother was a huge influence on your, cooking experience growing up. But clearly you were around it from a young age. So can we just start by understanding, like, when did you make the leap from the kitchen, the home kitchen, to the restaurant?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up around food for sure. You know, I mean, my family cooked, but, like, I didn't necessarily grow up around restaurants. You know, where I grew up on the South Side, most of the restaurants were fast food or pizza places. There weren't, like, you know, there wasn't, like, oh, the great Italian restaurant in our neighborhood. There was some place called Caputo's. That was like a fucking muddy lottery outfit, you know, the Southwest Highway. That, you know what I mean, you couldn't believe was an actual restaurant. But there wasn't, like, I didn't grow up around restaurants like that. So I grew up around food, but food for me was always, you know, especially cooking with my grandmother, was all about traditions. And, you know, like, our family getting together at the holidays and all the work we had to do to put into it, because we're a really big family. So you couldn't just, like, show up day of and cook. You know what I mean? Like, you got to set up for Thanksgiving. You know, on Columbus Day, you got to go make all the raviolis on Ravioli Day. And then so you're set up because you got to make, you know, 400 or 500 raviolis. You're not going to do that day up. So, you know what I mean? Like, I love those traditions. I always love, you know, getting together with the family. I'm really close with my aunts and uncles, my cousins. And so, like, that was the thing that, like, really made me fall in love with it. You know what I mean? I saw how it brought everybody together. And it was a thing we did. And from a young age, I don't know why, but that just really struck with me. I always, you know, I've always liked, you know, history and traditions and stories. And so, you know what I mean? That is what really brought me in. And then when I was like 15, 16, I started working in restaurants. And I fell in love with restaurants right away. And I was really, you know, I was in love with restaurants way before I was in love with cooking. And it was just kind of, you know, like, I knew I wanted to do that. But, you know, at the time, when I was 16, I worked at this bar and grill that was owned by two guys, Joe and Dan. It was called Joe Daniels.
Brilliant. Fair.
Brilliant.
Waste no
brilliant
time on the naming.
Southside marketing geniuses. So they were both lawyers. So these guys were like 50-year-old lawyers. They had bought this bar and grill in like this strip mall in a southwest suburb of Chicago. It was like a nicer bar and grill. But like, so my plan was, you know, that's how you own a restaurant. That's the only two people I knew who owned a restaurant, and how they did it was they went, they were lawyers and they made a bunch of money and they bought a bar and grill. So my plan was I was going to go and be a lawyer, make a bunch of money. And when I was 50, I was going to buy a bar and grill.
I would love to like have that explained on like a law school application.
Wait, that's like right, literally right. How I became a notary. Joe, you and I have the same experience. I come from a long line of notaries, and I was like, how do you become a notary? You go to law school. Turns out you can also just take an exam and pay $60 to the state of New York, which is what I ended up doing. But I had the same confusion about how you achieve your dreams through becoming a lawyer.
Right.
Very similar scale.
Right. So, you know, exactly. You know what I mean? We were like, oh, we're going to take this very long path to get to a very short destination.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that was my plan. I'm like, okay, I'm going to, yeah, that would have been great on a law school application. Like, why do you want to go to law school? It's like, so I can own a bar and grill 30 years from now.
with another guy, and we have to split the name.
With another guy, dude, hopefully his name is Dan, you know what I mean? Because that worked pretty good for these guys. So, anyways, I was, you know, so I go to college. I'm doing college. And when I was 19, I got a job cooking for the first time, like really cooking. The bar and grill I worked at, I worked for my best friend's dad. And I love this dude, this guy, Pat Doherty. He looks like fucking Brian Dennehy. He's like the perfect Southside guy. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Big as shit, big fucking head, Irish, you know, one of 11 kids. You know what I mean? Knew everybody, smoked Winston's. You know what I mean? Like, it was awesome. You know, I always had the cup of coffee and the Winston going because it was back when you could smoke in restaurants, you know?
Oh my God. And
so I loved Pat, and, you know, Pat loved me because, like, I was the only high school kid who, like, once I got to the restaurants, I stopped doing everything else. I had no extracurriculars. Like, once I got, like, you know, when I did, like, a college application, they're like, what'd you do? And I was like, oh, I just worked. I just, like, worked at a bar and grill, wow, like, 40 hours a week because I loved it. And so, which isn't great on a college application for anyone who's trying to go to college and not be a lifelong degenerate like myself. But... So, you know, I would pick up any shift. I always showed up, and I just loved it. But when I worked for him, I did anything. You know what I mean? I was a busboy. I washed dishes. I delivered pizzas. I answered phones. You know what I mean? Even before I was 21, sometimes I'd have to work the door if I was, like, the biggest guy working that night. Like, whatever. You know what I mean? Pat asked you to do it. You did it. And, you know, and it was great. I loved every single part of it. He'd be like, here's $3,000 cash. Go to Best Buy it when they open tomorrow and buy 6 TVs. And I was like, sure, dude, I'm going to go to fucking Best Buy. I had the coolest job in the world. And
oh my God.
So when I was 19, I was going to school in downtown Chicago, and I needed a job. So a guy I knew delivered coffee to this place downtown. And he was like, hey, I can get you in. So they were like, oh, have you cooked before? And I was like, yeah, of course I've cooked before. Which I hadn't really, obviously. And so that was like my first cook job. It was really cool. And I was just making pizzas at first. And then, you know, I got moved up to sandwiches and wraps, you know, kind of a big deal.
The platonic perfect food is a sandwich.
Okay.
What's up?
You want to talk about it?
What?
I think that the best food in the world is a sandwich.
I need you to clarify that point first.
Platonic, as in like perfection of Play-Doh?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were like talking about like a platonic relationship. Like,
yeah,
oh
yeah,
no. Different type of platonic.
Yeah.
Plutonic is like, okay, never mind.
She might have missed the part where she said she went to Northwestern. I don't know if you.
Wait, I'm so glad you're here.
I don't know if that recorded, but.
Okay,
I actually went to school in Chicago.
okay. I went to a little university in Evanston. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's a Big Ten school, but it's basically Ivy League. I don't know.
No sweat. That's where she got her journalism degree.
It was
degree.
Not
That's
basically
why
Ivy League when I went there. We were not as good. And the football team is shit. Right. I'd like to go on record.
I'm going to completely. All right. I'm going to go on record derailing the shit out of this right now. Man. It was not that good. Northwestern
was
not
what it is today.
Good.
It's cachet.
As in like what?
Its cachet has gone
as
way
it, like,
up.
It wasn't the best university in Evanston, or was it like the only reason it's not the best university here is because the University of Chicago's here. It's one of the best universities in the world. Like, that's insane.
Okay, I'm going to recuse myself from this conversation and say I love sandwiches. Yeah. Bits, go on.
Yeah, while you say that, my question stems primarily around, like, the... So, I want to understand why pizza is sort of, like, level one and sandwiches are level two, as far as, like, you move up. When you're moving up, you're moving from pizza to sandwich. What complications does sandwich introduce versus a pizza?
You know, I don't know. It's, you know, like, sandwiches, you were doing, like, solo. Pizza, you had a crew. So it was like you were more in it. Sandwiches, you were more like had to be a little bit more self-sufficient. But it was this restaurant. It was, I don't know if you ever went down to the Northwestern grad school. That was right across from Water Tower Place. Just totally shitty grad school, so you probably never went by there. But but they had Food Life in Water Tower Place.
Yes, I remember.
It was a lettuce. But it was a lettuce entertain you cop. Yeah. And it was like way ahead of its time. But they had these cards and you could go in and they had all these different concepts. It was like a way precursor to a food hall. So it was like all these concepts in one place, right?
Interesting.
Before like anyone was doing that. This is, you know, 2005. Like the White Sox are about to win the World Series. We're riding real high right now. So I went from pizza to sandwich to wraps. And then one day the person who worked like the stir fry station didn't show up. Hey, Jake, what do you need? Yeah, Jake's got to make some copies.
Hey, Jake.
So then they were like, have you ever worked like a walk station? And I was like, kind of. And what I meant by kind of was like, I hadn't, but I wanted to. And so.
Not at all.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, I mean, like, sort of. And, you know, it's like, I had seen a walk. And, so then I got to work that station. That was like the real first, like, true cooking station I ever worked in my life. And that was awesome. And I was working there. I probably worked there for about a year. And I was in school and, you know, on my path of, you know, becoming a lawyer to own a bar and grill. And so I was like, I need to go work in an office because I felt like that's what people did in college. I didn't have a super great grasp on this, obviously. And so... A friend of mine who I'd met at school got me a job. She was an office manager. So I was like, hey, I need like an office job. She's like, I can get you an office job. And so I got
your job is office.
I mean, literally, I was like an admin for this sales company where all I did was like write emails for people and send faxes for people.
Like Pam Beasley. You were a Pam Beasley.
I was Pam.
Love that.
But yeah. Yeah, but that's... when I was there working in an office is when I decided that maybe I did not like working in an office. And so my goal of working in an office for 30 years to work in a restaurant was maybe not the path. And that's when I really like shifted gears.
So
you're so lucky
you
got out
young,
by the way.
Yeah. Run.
You're really lucky. Because otherwise you're just making a podcast about people like you as opposed to being like you.
Well, yeah. So this is the crazy part. So it's like, and by shifting gears, I mean like I violently threw that shit and fucking neutral dropped it going 100 miles an hour on the damn ride. Like, I just like decided one day I was not going to go back to college.
And how old are you at this point?
I'm 20.
Oh, boy.
And
okay, yeah.
So I'm just like, I'm done with college. I'm going to figure this out. And so I literally just like Googled how Emeril Lagasse became a chef. And I saw that he went to culinary school. And I'm not even kidding. This is how I figured it out.
This is genius.
So I was like, all right. I had never heard of culinary school. I knew no chefs. I knew no one who did this for a profession. And so I found some culinary schools that were in Chicago. And so I dropped out of college. I took a full-time job at the office as a salesperson. And I mean, I was really on my Pam Beasley shit.
I respect that you dropped out of college, but you kept the office job.
Well, so
I needed
to make money to go to culinary school because I was dropping out of college. And so I did this sales job for like another 6 months. I ended up getting fired. It's the only job I've ever been fired from in my life. because I was a horrible employee. I was really good at sales, but I was really bad at like showing up when they wanted me to show up. And like,
kind of a prerequisite which sucks.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like behaving like a grown up because I was 20 years old. So I worked there for 6 months. I got fired a week later. I started culinary school, but I dropped out of college like the week before Christmas. So, you know, these big family holidays I'm talking about, I show up at Christmas Eve at my grandmother's house having freshly dropped out of college.
Oh, and you're the
chef,
fuck up.
Which
you're the one everyone's talking about.
I had never spoken to anyone about. I had never told anyone this is what I was going to do. I'd been telling everybody I was going to go to law school. You know what I mean? So now all of a sudden, you know, I'm showing up at Christmas Eve and they're like, you know, my mom's 1 in 9. Right.
Oh my God.
Was a Chicago police lieutenant for 30 years. I've been back to the south side of Chicago. During that time, she had 4 children and got a law degree. So I had to tell her, like, man, I think school's kind of fucking dumb, but I don't really want to tutor. Which, you know, so telling her that and 3 of her other siblings who also have law degrees. And, you know, my grandmother and all these people are just like, you're an idiot. Like, what are you doing? Like, just finish your degree. Like,
finish your degree, then you can own your restaurant. Oh my God.
No, that's what they said. Everybody was like, just go get it, you know, finish college, go to law school, finish law school, and then you can do whatever you want. But, like, just go get a degree, get a law degree, and then you can do whatever you want.
Ugh. And but the real-time feedback of being at a holiday for that type of decision, you really hard launched this pivot.
This is what I mean. When I'm saying I shifted gears, it's I dropped the transmission out of the car shifting gears.
Oh, my God.
Like, you know what I mean? So I make this move. Nobody's pumped. Like, nobody is pumped for this
move.
I move back home. I'm living in my parents' basement. Go to culinary school. I get a week into culinary school. I get a job in a restaurant. And so, like, you know, culinary school is 15 months. I go to school 5 days a week from, like, 8 to 4. I'd go to the restaurant Tuesday through Friday after school. Then I'd work Saturday, Sunday at the restaurant. We were closed on Mondays.
Wow.
So my first, you know, 15 months of the culinary school program, all I did was cook. You know what I mean? And, like, yeah, and, like, party like an asshole. But, like, you know, and it was just, like, that's – but, like, I cooked, you know, from 8 a.m. every day till, you know, 1 in the morning every day, basically. And just, like, completely just went all in on it.
And, like, what are you cooking at culinary school and then switching gears and cooking in the evening? Like, is it, like, having a foot in two totally different worlds? Like, how similar does that really feel, like, cooking in one of those kind of spaces in versus the other?
Well, it was kind of like, you know, I always equate it to, like, in the beginning it was helpful, right? Because it's kind of like learning a foreign language.
Mm.
So it's like, you know, I'm going to school to learn Spanish, and then I'm going to work and speaking, you know, trying to speak Spanish. And in the beginning, when you're not good at either part of it, you're like, okay, you know what I mean? This is helpful. I kind of know what people are talking about. I'm still, like, lost in the fucking world, and I'm getting crushed every night and just, like, yelled at and shit on and whatever. But, you know, you just kind of keep going. And then as I got further into culinary school, you know, I was so integrated into the restaurant. It was like, well, now it's like, I'm, you know, hearing the things they're saying in culinary school. And it's like, yeah, this is how you, like, speak Spanish out of a book, but nobody talks like this.
Yeah.
Like, I spend, you know, more hours a week now, you know what I mean, like, living in a place where we're doing this. And so it kind of, like, shifted, you know, for the last 6 months I was there, where it's like, okay, you know what I mean, I'm kind of done with this, and I'm like, really in it over here.
Yeah, damn. And, I mean, so I feel like around this time you start to get, you know, you feel free to go into whatever depth of detail, but obviously something that's really notable about you is you have this sort of like incredible, you know, mentors that we are ourselves aware of in the form of like Stephanie Izzard, et cetera. But it also sounds like from a lot of your early days, like your best friend's dad, for instance, like there's a lot of these sort of like strong figures and forces early on in your career that are likely kind of like getting things shaped for you. When you think about those being a restaurateur now, how are you, I'm trying to decide how I want to ask this. Like, how do you thread the needle between those types of those different kinds of mentors, like from the chef side of things, but also from like the business and what it just means to run a restaurant and like be a personality?
Yeah, I try to balance it. I try to, you know, for my chefs and for my managers, like make them understand that like the cooking part of it's important, right? But like that comes. That's just reps and time. You know what I mean? The other stuff you can work on, you know, like learning how to run the business is really important. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter what amount of cooking you do. Like if you don't make money, you don't make money. You don't have a restaurant at the end of the day, period.
Yeah.
I think, you know, from a young age, from working at those places to the chefs I worked for, from Art Smith to Bill Kim to Stephanie Isard to Tony Batuado. They all had a sense of also responsibility to community outside of the restaurant that I think is really, really important. And even it, you know, it goes all the way back to when I was 16 and, you know, when I worked for Pat and, you know, I remember like delivering pizzas for a function at the school. And I was like, okay, what do I charge him? He's like, we don't charge him for that. I'm like, it's like 20 pizzas, Pat. We're not going to charge him. And he's like, you know, if you don't take care of the community, they're not going to take care of you. Like, we're a function of them. You know, you gotta do both sides. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to work for people who felt in that same vein, you know what I mean, who were very involved. So, like, that's really, really important to me to understand that part of it. Also because, you know, like, I'm from Chicago. This is my city. I've lived here my whole life. I've never lived anywhere else. You know, I never will live anywhere else, I would bet. And so, like, I think that's really important for them to understand. And I think also understanding, like, interacting with each other, interacting with the customers is not, like, something you have to do, but something you get to do. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and if you're good at it, and if you learn to enjoy it, it's the best part. You know what I mean? Those interactions with your guests, touching tables, getting out there. And the more you're able to get out there, the more you're able to build your brand. The more people know who you are, the more people, you know, will get that idea. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's like trying to get these, you know, young chefs to get really comfortable of, like, not only just talking in front of their peers about, you know, when you have to lead a line or when you have to lead a pre-shift or, you know, when you have to go out and talk about a dish for, you know, 15 servers who have been doing this longer than, you know, since you were in sixth grade, and be like, this is an awesome dish. And I know you've seen 1,000 dishes, but this is the best one you've ever had. Like, to being able to go out, touch a table, make somebody's night special, or go recover a guest. It's like all things that are just as important as knowing, you know what I mean, how to make a proper veal stock and how to, you know, reduce it to a Debbie and how to, you know, make pasta the correct way, how to properly salt the bubbler. Like, it's, you got to do all parts of it, you know? And I think that's the line I try to walk is that, like, yes, that's overwhelming and it's so much, but, like, that's it. Like, that's the gig is, like, that you're asking for everything.
Mm. Yeah. And you kind of are touching on this now, but I think that something, and of course we joke, Bits and I joke that you are the Riz King of Top Chef, which I know we already said, but, like, you seem like an incredibly well-adjusted person. And oftentimes in the media and, like, our perception of chefs is, like, the arrogance or the ego or, like, the cutthroat nature of the culinary world. And it seems in both what you're saying and what we've seen in your public persona that that's really not the attitude that you necessarily take towards your career and the restaurants that you've opened. And so I guess our question, but you clearly need to possess some of that inside you to, and this is like the royal you, to get as far as you have gotten in your career. So how is it that A, like, you don't really let that surface in, like, your daily existence, because it really seems antithetical to who you are, if I may overreach, but also, like, how do you keep that, like, burning in you to keep you going?
Yeah, it's a weird balance, right? Because, like, you have to have a confidence. You have to tell yourself, like, I'm going to make it, especially when you're a line cook and you're sitting there and you're making no fucking money and you're working a million hours and all your friends are out partying on a Saturday night and, you know what I mean, you're on the red line home after a 16-hour shift and you're like, what am I doing? You know what I mean? I've just gotten screamed at all day. I've just had people tell me I'm never going to make it, that I suck at this, that I should quit. You know what I mean? For my whole day. And everybody else I know is, like, not a care in the world. You know what I mean? They're, you know what I mean, ripping shots right now and having a great time. And I'm, you know, thinking about a quail I overcooked or undercooked 6 hours ago. And how that, you know what I mean, is the worst thing I've ever done in my life. And what a piece of shit I am. You know, like, it's so, it's a weird balance of, like, you got to tell yourself, like, I'm going to make it. We're going to do this. And I think for me, it's just like constantly telling myself, like, there's no other option. Like, we have to do it. Like, we have to fucking succeed. And that I'm just going to work it until it works. You know what I mean? And I'm just going to push as hard as I possibly can till it works, no matter what. Like, I'm not going to let it fail. Like, and you know, who's ever with me, they're coming with me. Whether they're running with me or I'm dragging them or whatever the hell it is, like, we're fucking going. And so, you know, I kind of keep that in my head. And I think it's, you know, like I come from a big family. I come from the South Side. Like, the humility of that is just ever present. Like, they don't give a shit. You know what I mean? who I think I am. You know what I mean? They don't give a shit. You know what I mean? If I want a, you know, Michelin star, if I want Top Chef, like, whatever. You know what I mean? I'm fucking, you know, their cousin Joe. Like, you know, like, they don't care.
You're still cousin, like, Joe, who dropped out of college.
Right. I'm still a guy who doesn't have a college degree. You know what I mean? It's like, what they'll tell you. You know, like, they're not, you know, they're not impressed. And, you know, like, so it's, and I think, like, working at restaurants, you get humbled constantly because, you know, I think it was, there's a restaurant store here in town, Kevin Bain told me one time, like, you're never as good as your best review and you're not as bad as your worst, mm-hmm. you know, and the only truth is mm-hmm. the diamond. And that's the truest of it. And it's like, and if you don't stay constant and on it, like, you just don't keep it. And so it's, I think me knowing in the back of my head, like, I've worked so hard for this and it can all go away in an instant if I don't stay on, if I don't keep putting time and energy into people. And also, like, I love it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. this is one of those things when I talk to people who are like, oh, I'm thinking about doing this for a career, especially if they're like thinking about changing careers. I'm like, listen, if you can wake up tomorrow and you can imagine doing anything else, that's the thing you should do. If you could, you have a fathom in your head of like, I could be a chef or I could, you know what I mean, like, do anything else, do that other thing.
That's beautiful advice.
I'm like, because it's like, I wake up and it's like, the idea is that, like, if I had to do something else today that didn't involve a restaurant, like, fuck that. Like, fuck that. You know, and it's, and I think it's like my same approach with like kind of TV stuff where it's like the TV stuff is really cool. It's crazy that I did that. You know, it's crazy I was on Top Chef, that I've been on other shows, that I've been able to do all these things. But if you told me tomorrow, like, hey, you're never going to have one more second of ever being in front of a camera for the rest of your life, I'd be like, okay, I could deal with that. But if you told me, like, tomorrow, like, hey, you could never work at a restaurant again, I'd be like, well, what the fuck am I supposed to do?
Mm-hmm. What do you want from me?
Like, you know what I mean? Like, what am I going to do? This is going to be a problem. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is, like, I'm going to try to invade Cuba. Like, we can't do this. Like,
too much time on my hands. Too right. many resources.
Like, no, like, this is, you know, like, I like, this is my lane.
That's incredible. So we talked about obviously three restaurants, big family, kind of a kooky angle on this, but when you look at your restaurants, I don't know if it's like weird or presumptive to think of them as like your children in some capacity, and each of them has a little bit of its own personality or quirks. Oh, 1,000%. Talk to us about those, because I'd love to hear from your perspective. Yeah,
it's 1,000%. You know what I mean? It's like my children, and it's like, you know, these restaurants are like my kids, and then, you know, my teams here are like my kids, and you know what I mean? It's a really weird position to be in. And it's like, you know, my wife always like laughs about it, you know, and she'll just be like, oh, how are your other children? You know, like, because it's like, you know, it's like, you know, if I'm not here for a while, they're like, well, you haven't been here. And I'm like, no, I know. Like, I'm sorry. I, you know, like, I'm opening a new restaurant. So like, I've been down there. It's like, you know, Carchofo's almost 3 months old. So it's like, you know, getting a lot of flack from my other team of when, you know, and I like talk to them before it, like the same as like we talked mm-hmm. to my son, like when my daughter was born, I'm like, hey, there's going to be a new baby in the house. Like, this doesn't mean I love you less. This doesn't mean I have less love for you. Are you going to have to share some time? Yes. Are you going to have to share some space? Of course. But, you know, it's going to be really exciting for you too. And it was like, this is like the conversation, you know, it's like having with my team, because it's like, you know, like, I don't know, I fall in love with these fucking kids, like, yeah. I just do. I can't help it, and I get it. Like, when I'm not here, I miss it, you know what I mean? And it's like the same way when I don't see my kids, I miss them. And when I'm missing something there, I feel guilty. When I'm missing something here, I feel guilty. When I'm off and they have a super, like, super busy night, I'm like, fuck, I want to be in there. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be in that mix right now. Like, you know what I mean? Why are they, you know, why are they doing all these covers without me? Like, I want to be right there. And, you know, and it's like hard. And it's like, you know, so trying to find that balance and, you know, for both, you know, for kids and restaurants. And it's just, so I think, you know, where I've come to with it is just like, wherever I am, whatever I'm doing, just trying to be the most present in that, right?
Yeah.
If, you know, I'm at one restaurant, being about it there, you know what I mean? Talking to my team, you know, whether it's just catching up or like, you know, working on a skill with them or just seeing how they're doing. And when I'm at home, you know, like really being present with my kids, doing the things, you know, making time to have, you know, fun moments with them.
When you're, what does that tipping point feel like? When you go from restaurant one to restaurant two and restaurant two to restaurant three, like, is it just this feeling like I have to do something? Like, I have to do something with this idea I have? Like, when do you know the time is right?
I mean, there's so many things, right? And, you know, the number one thing I think is, at least for me, is like the team. Like, my team was ready to grow. Like, I had too many people who were all ready for like more. Right. Mm-hmm. So it was either like I kept evolving or like they were going to leave. And that's fine if they leave. You know, my thing with them always is like the idea is progress, and that progress can happen internally. That progress can happen outside of here, and which way it happens, I don't care. I just want you to progress. Like, that is the goal every day. Like, get better. You know, this is all an investment in yourself. So it's like, you know, if there's room to do it here, let's do it. If it's somewhere else you want to be, if you tell me where that is, like, I'll work my ass off to get you there. And then, you know, some things where it's like, I just knew, you know, like Carchofa, I knew I wanted to do for years. And then it was finding the right space at the right time. It's the right deal and having the right people. So it's like a mix of 100 different things. And then it's also like reminding yourself of like anything else major in life. Like, there is no right time. You just decide like, hey, we're going to fucking do this and we're going to make this work. And we're going to go all in on this. And you know what I mean? Like, that's, you know, a thing that I think a lot of people don't understand, because it's something that they've never done maybe in their life. And maybe they'll never do. It's just take a massive risk to put yourself out there, not only like financially, but personally, and say like, hey, I'm going to put something out there for the world to judge. And they need no credentials to judge what I do. They can just show up for $20. They can decide if they think I'm a good chef or not, if they think I opened a cool restaurant or not, you know what I mean? Or if they think they spent $20 well or not. And so it's a wild, wild feeling, you know, and that's why it's like you have to have kind of an insane mindset to do it, of like, you know, you're just betting it all the time. And, you know, I remember talking to like my best friend. We were line cooks together. He's got 3 restaurants in Detroit now, and he opened his first one before I opened mine. And I remember talking to him about it like 2 nights before. I was about to go up there to Detroit the next day. And he's like, it's just crazy. He's like, because like, if this doesn't work out, he's like, nothing works out. Like, you know what I mean? He's like, I got like a mortgage. I got a kid. Yeah. I got all these things. Like, this has to work out. And I was like, yeah, man, but that's like just the bet we've always been making, is like, this has to work out because we got nothing else. You know what I mean? We had no money to put in. We had nothing else to put in. The only thing we had to put in was ourselves.
And it's crazy too, because being in Chicago, the scale that this is happening, like across the city, like it's such a food town, like, I don't know, things come and go. As somebody who's lived in Chicago, born and raised, when you look around now as like, you know, somebody, an exalted chef, far along in your career, a lot of success, what gets you excited about what's happening in Chicago food scene today as compared to maybe when you were growing up?
I think what gets me excited about Chicago today is still part of what got me excited about it, you know, 18 years ago when I started line cooking. It was like, we're the best industry city in the United States. But I'm not saying just like we have the best restaurant. I'm saying it's the best industry city. Like, we have the best cooks, the best bartenders, the best front of the house, and we have the best, the most interconnected system of restaurants in this in the country, without a doubt. You know what I mean? Where it's like, we all, like, as much as, like, you know, I'm on the same block with Stephanie Izzard, Paul Kahn, Grant Achatz, all these people, like, we're fucking rooting for each other. We're pulling for each other. We know each other. You know what I mean? We see each other at events. We text each other when things are wrong. We help each other out when the cards are down, whatever it may be. Like, we're, you know what I mean, a pretty unified unit. Like, we get shit done here. And I think that's so special. And I think it's something that has not been lost generationally. You know what I mean? So many different things get lost generationally through restaurants, you know, via good or bad. You know what I mean? Whatever they may be. So many things have changed. But I think it's something that we still fight for really hard, is to have a connected industry and to, you know, make that feel, you know, that's really important to us. Like, that's part of the hospitality, is who we are as, you know, Chicago industry people.
It's incredible. Beautiful. I think about, like, the New York scene and it just seems like so cutthroat. And like, my guess is that there are some friends, but not a lot. And so it's really interesting to hear you talk about it that way.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. But we are, in fact, a Top Chef podcast. And so we do have some questions for you about your time on the show, after the show, on the other side of judges' table. And so if you wouldn't mind just indulging us a little bit, would you mind just telling us how, like, you have exposure to Stephanie Izzard early in your career. What was your journey to getting on the show? Did you seek it out? Did they seek you out? Was it something that you wanted as a milestone in your career? What was your relationship to the show before going on?
Yeah. So, you know, I came up in Chicago, like, I was working at Table 52 when Steph was, like, her season was in. And I remember it was like something like all of us were watching. You know what I mean? We talked about it every Friday at work. And you know what I mean? We were all pulling for Steph. Like, Chicago, the other thing is, we are homers. We are hard homers. We don't give a shit. You know what I mean? We will go to bat for our people. Like, it is, you know what I mean? Like, people were, like, during my season, people were getting, like, big mad at people who they felt like had slighted me on the show or talked shit about me. They're like, yeah, fuck them. They better never come here. You know what I mean? I'm like, all right, like, calm down. Like, I don't have any beefs there. You know what I mean? Like, relax. Like, and I was working for Art Smith at the time. And, you know, Art Smith ended up going on Top Chef Masters. And, you know, I left there. And, you know, when I worked for Steph, it was kind of funny because, like, I was a huge fan of Steph's. Like, I had watched that season. I was super into it. I never brought it up. You know what I mean? I never was like, oh, my God. We never talked about Top Chef. Ever. Ever. Ever at Pearl the Goat. You know what I mean? The first 2 years I was there. Like, it was just not something we spoke about, because back then it was kind of like, I felt like people used to try to use it to, like, almost discredit her. Like, oh, she's like a TV show. You know what I mean? And it was like, okay. Yeah, like, come in here. See what the fuck's up. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
eat it.
Yeah. You know, and it was like when she opened that restaurant, she came to the West Loop and people were like, oh, she's going to West Loop. That's terrible. She's opening this restaurant. It's too big. Like, they're busy now, but, you know, we'll see what happens in 6 months. Like, she doesn't know what she's doing. She's, you know, this TV show. And then, you know, 6 months happened. And they're like, oh, we'll see what happens in the winter. And then the winter happened. And then, you know, 14 years happened. And it's still one of the busiest and best restaurants in Chicago. Because Steph's a monster. You know what I mean? She's one of the most talented chefs I've ever met. And, like, and was hell bent on showing everybody that. And it was awesome. You know, so Steph and I never talked about Top Chef the whole time I worked there. You know what I mean? We stayed friends after I left. We're still friends to this day. I consider her a mentor. But we never spoke about it. So I left there. I went to work at, you know, I cooked Korean food for a couple of years after that. And then I went to work for Tony, and Tony was on Top Chef Masters too. And he had Sarah, who worked for him, who was on Top Chef as well. And so, you know, whenever you cook, you know, there's always people who are like, oh, you should go to Top Chef. Are you ever going to go to Top Chef? Like, you know, and I'm like,
great idea.
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know, probably not, whatever. And so I was working at Spiaggia. I take it over as chef de cuisine there. And Tony just called me one day. And he's like, hey, you're at the restaurant. I was like, yeah, of course, chef. What do you mean? He's like, the producers from Top Chef are in town. They're casting in Chicago. And I guess they were casting at Sarah's restaurant. and they did a big casting. They met a bunch of people. They didn't like anybody. He's like, so they called me and they asked me if I knew anybody that they should meet. And I told them I thought they should meet. And I was like, why? He's like, I think they should meet. And I said, I don't know. And he's like, listen, they're coming over, just take a meeting. I was like, sure, come. You know, whatever. If I'm going to take a meeting, I'll take a meeting. So these two producers show up. We sit down. We talk for like 45 minutes. And I'm like, you know, I've had friends who had gone through the process of trying to get out. And it's a lengthy process, and it's really hard to get out. And a lot of them who I thought were, you know, even better chefs than me, who were more interesting than me, had a more interesting backstory than me, like, didn't get out. So I'm like, I got no fucking shot at this. I'm the most, like, regular-ass south side of Chicago dude who's just, like, cooking Italian food. You know what I mean? At a place they already had a chef from. Like, you know, whatever. But I'll talk to these people. So I talked to these two women for 45 minutes. We have a lovely conversation. And at the end of it, the one woman, Heather Allen, she goes to me, she goes, you got to do this. And I was like, I don't know. She goes, you got to do it. She goes, it's a process to get on. She goes, but I think you should do it. And so I was like, all right. So I talked to Tony about it. I talked to my wife about it. They were both like, you got nothing to lose. You might as well get on the path, you know? So I was like, all right. So then I had to like send in a bunch of stuff for the first round, pictures and menus and all these things, my resume or whatever. So I send that all in, make it to the next round. You have to send in more stuff, make it to the next round. I have to send in some videos and shit. And I knew a lot of people who had made it to that round. So I sent in all the videos. I'm like, all right, this will probably be what I never hear back from. So then it was like the last final interview. What they do is you have to fly to LA, you do an in-person interview, you do a psych evaluation, and you do a physical evaluation. Mm. So they call me, they say, hey, you got to come out to LA, and you got to do these three things. I said, I can't. I'm going to Italy. I'm going to stage in Italy. You know what I mean? So I can't come to LA. And they were like, all right, well, okay, you can do the physical and the psych eval in Chicago, and then we'll do like a Skype when you're in Italy. And I was like, all right, cool. You know what I mean? I'm not going to not go there.
I love that. Bend to my will.
No, but I was like, I'm not going to make it up. You know what I mean? I'm not going to cancel a fucking 2-week stage trip to Italy to not make it on a TV show. So I go, I do the physical. I go, I do the mental thing. In this guy's like living room, it was completely hilarious. And then I'm in Italy. I'm staying with my sous chef's parents in a suburb of Florence. And I'm with them. This is like 2017. So like, you know, the internet in Italy at that time is like more of an idea than a thing. And so I'm like trying to get on the Skype call. And it is just like not working, not fucking working at all.
Oh my God.
And I just like, you know, I'm like pouring sweat. I can't get this thing to work. I keep getting cut off, like super flustered. I can't even tell these people what I'm doing because they can't, I'm not allowed to tell my sous chef, so they can't know. So, you know, it's like this whole thing. So finally I end up, you know, like 3.5 hours of this, trying to make this Skype call work. Doesn't fucking work. We end up doing a phone call. I'm like super flustered on it. I get off the phone. I was like, well, that's the end of that. I just absolutely shit the bed on that so hard.
Oh, man.
Like, this is a disaster. But I was like, you know what? I'm in fucking Tuscany. I'm going to cook dinner for this family. It was my last night stayed with them. So I cooked them a dinner. And, you know, we sat in their kitchen and we drank wine and we drank a Amaro. We smoked cigarettes after the kids went to bed at the kitchen table. And it was like one of the best nights of my life. And I was like, fuck it. You know what I mean? I didn't get on this show. But, you know, like, this was the coolest experience ever. So, like, I made the right call. So I get back to Chicago. They call me. They're like, hey, you know, there was a whole staff in Italy. We want to do another Skype interview with you. Mm. And I was like, oh, shit. Okay. So I do a Skype interview. That went a lot better, you know, with the like final producers. And so I'm like, I don't know, whatever. This is like beginning of April. I'm like, we'll see what happens. I didn't have high hopes. So 2 weeks later, they call me and they're like, hey, you're going to, you're on this season. You need to be, this is like April 16th. They're like, you need to be in Denver May 6th. You're going to be gone for 2 months.
Oh my gosh.
So And like when you go, you can't tell anybody, right? You got to make up a fucking cover story and all this shit.
Oh, you can't say like, 3 weeks to get back. Hey, I need time off.
No, you can't be like, oh, hey guys, I'm going to. So like I told, like Tony knew, I had to tell the CEO of the company I worked for. I obviously told my wife. I told a couple of my chefs. I couldn't tell my line cooks. I didn't tell my siblings where I was going.
Wow.
I told my parents, they didn't understand. I think my dad thought I was going to film Chopped. But
that is a 2 months, dad mistake. The longest Chopped episode of all time.
He had no idea what Top Chef was. My sister's trying to explain it to him. She's like, it's like the show that go and, you know, cook. And my dad's like, huh? She's like, what's the one with Tim Gunn on Bravo?
Oh, Project Runway.
Project Runway.
So my sister's finally like, she's like, Dad, remember when I used to watch Project Runway and you watched with me? He's like, yeah. She's like, it's like that, but cooking. And he's like, oh. He's like, that sounds pretty cool.
Great boy.
Yeah. And he was like, is this like a new show? And she's like, No.
Season 15.
It's actually decidedly not.
Yeah. So the information was safe with them because they had no idea what the fuck. But so you go, you know what I mean? And you get there and like, they kind of, you know what I mean? They tell you, you can't tell anyone. They send you a 1,000-page contract that you just signed because you're a chef and not a lawyer and you didn't go to Northwestern.
If only I
knew a notary at that point in my life. But I did not. And, you know, so you go, they kind of make it sound like, oh yeah, you'll be able to like stay in touch. Like, don't worry. When you get there, you're like, give us your cell phone, give us your wallet. And like, you know, like the only person I really asked about it before I went is like, I told Steph. I went and saw Steph. I was like, hey, we need to have a coffee like tomorrow. She sat down. I told her I was going. I was like, do you have any advice? And she was like, I don't know. I went on that show like 10 years ago. And I was like, what do I do? She's like, just, you know, like show up and like, don't fucking cook anything gross and just like win. And I was like,
that's it.
Can't argue with
that. You have like other things, like more useful information. But that's basically what she told me. She was just like, "Listen, just you got to stay in the fight, and then just start chopping people down." And I was like, "Okay."
Wow.
But she didn't give me any like, "Hey, like you're allowed to bring this, or you're not allowed to bring this, or any of that information that would have been super helpful." So I like showed up with like a bunch of fucking cookbooks, you know what I mean? And, like I was like, books on like foraging wild herbs in the fucking Rockies of Colorado. And they're like, "Yeah, you can't have any of this shit." They took it all away.
Immediately confiscated.
Contraband. You know what I mean? Like I would have been better off like stuffing my suitcase with cocaine. And, like, they were so serious about it to the point where, like, when we went into Whole Foods to shop, they would take all the food magazines and they would turn them around so we couldn't see any of the food or what was on the cover or recipes or anything. Like, that's how, like, hardcore they were about it.
That is insane. And it's funny you mention that because I don't go to Whole Foods often, but when I go, I always notice the magazines there. They have a strange selection of magazines. Like my Whole Foods at least carries multiple Taylor Swift magazines. So nothing to do with food, but I guess you wouldn't have to turn that one around.
There is a Rogue Bon Appetit with a nice home cooked dish on the cover though. Might strike inspiration. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have like a Bon Appetit, you got a Food and Wine in there, you know, you never know. Might give somebody an idea.
You'll see a chicken and be like, oh, that's it, chicken.
Right. I don't. You know, they do all this weird shit. So anyways, you go in, they take your phone away. And then it's like your only contact is you can do a FaceTime call basically for 10 minutes on camera on a producer's phone like once every 3 to 5 days.
Wow.
And they don't really tell you when that's coming up. And then you can't talk about anything because you're not allowed to say who's there or who's not there. You're not supposed to say if you're on the show or if you got kicked off. So right. It's like, you know, you're not getting information. And then it's filmed, so it's like you're not getting any real information from home. My wife's not going to be like, oh, your mom's acting like a fucking crazy bitch. You know what I mean? Like on national TV. Like, you know, or like, you know what I mean? Or like, oh, this friend's pregnant. Like, no one's surprised. And, you know, like, whatever. So it's just like, you know, 10 minutes of you go like, hey, how are you? I miss you. Like, yeah, I miss you. Like,
it's like soldiers in the trenches of World War I got more privileges than you did.
Yeah, so you're just like, whatever. You know, you're living in this house with all these people you just met who, you know, are also your competition. And, like, you're sleeping in fucking children's bunk beds. And it's, the whole thing's weird. But, you know, and it's, if you get kicked off day one or if you win the whole thing, you get your cell phone back the same day, 2 months later.
Damn. Wow, that's the worst news possible.
It's so funny hearing talk about this, because we also interviewed Savannah, who was the runner-up in the most recent season. And sounds like your prep experiences were very different. She was, like, doing timed laps in Whole Foods with her fiance, like, going to the counter, making sure she could order steak in time. Seems like you just showed up completely blind.
I know, and I felt like such a dick when I won. You know what I mean? Because it was like, so many people on my season have been doing all these things. I'm like prepping them, like, oh, did you like this? And I'm like, I bought a pressure cooker and I cooked some chickpeas. Because I wasn't sure if I could use a pressure cooker without
The pressure cooker does get people. That was always smart.
So, yeah, I figured out how to use the pressure cooker before I went. So I did that one thing for prep. But then I just kind of showed up and I was like, yeah, let's go.
Let's let it ride.
Oh, my God.
Okay, you sort of mentioned cookbooks about foraging in Colorado. We have a very important question for you that I know Bits has been dying to ask.
Yeah, I know there's, like, a lot we can ask about, like, your actual time on the show, but, like, I just need to know what was going through your head in the middle of the snowstorm mountain challenge. And there's nothing more to it. I just find that absolutely batshit, and I need to know, like, what the general vibe was.
You have no idea how fucking batshit it was. So also, this is the thing you have to understand. It's, like, how a day works. So day works, you wake up with cameras, get dressed, get in a fucking car, and you have no idea what's going to happen afterwards. So you start driving.
Oh, my God.
So we're just driving. And we're like, where are we going? And they're like, don't know. Can't tell you. And it's like, all right. And it's also like, at this point, I think it was late May or early June when we went camping. So they planned this camping episode at Estes Park. And Estes Park is at a decent elevation. So the night before we got there, it dumped 3 feet of snow. So it looks like we're out there in the winter. It's the end of fucking May.
Oh my God.
So there should not be 3 feet of snow on the ground. So it dumps 3 feet, like legitimately 3 feet. Now, I'm a city boy, but I grew up in cold weather and I grew up camping. Kind of the key to camping is preparation. When you're leaving the house in the morning, you have no idea where the fuck you're going. You're certainly not prepared to go camping in 3 feet of snow.
Oh,
so I'm wearing like dress socks. You know what I mean? Like, and so they take us out there, and like half of these kids have never seen fucking snow before because they're like California chefs or whatever. Mm. You know what I mean? They're like, what do we do with the snow? It's like, fucking start shoveling is what you do. So it's like the whole thing is a disaster. It's freezing cold out there. We're sleeping in tents. You know what I mean? They bought all the same size sleeping bags, and you know, I'm 6'3". So it's like, I do not fit in a regular sleeping bag. Oh, I need a longer sleeping bag. Which isn't that big of an issue when you're camping at a normal time of year where it's not too cold. But when it's extremely cold out, when any part of you falls out of that sleeping bag and touches the ground, it feels like it just got dropped into ice water. So this was the like deal they made with us, is like, to make it better, is they said, so instead of only having 3 hours to cook, you guys can just get up at whatever time you want and start cooking. So they just gave us more time to cook. To battle the elements.
Oh my God.
Because nobody could fucking
sleep. That's a fair trade
off. Right? They gave us like bottles of whiskey and like said you could wake up whenever you want.
Oh my God.
So we got absolutely smashed sitting around a campfire drinking whiskey to try to sleep in the cold. And then woke up at 6 a.m. because it was too cold to be in the tent. So we'd be in the sunshine and just start cooking.
Oh my God.
And so we just like cooked all day for the stuff. And I'm like, whatever. It was like fun cooking in the snow when the sun was out. Like, you just didn't care anymore. And I love cooking like that. So I was like, this is right up my alley. But the funny thing was, so one of the people who, you know, they have the extra people at judges table was the woman who was in charge of that campground, right? Who was the head of whatever. And so off camera, we were leaving. I was like, hey, can I ask you something? And she was like, sure. I go, how many other people are out here camping right now in the snow? I was like, this is kind of nuts. She's like, oh, zero. She's like, the park's completely closed. She's like, it's way too dangerous for anyone to be out here right now.
I was like, cool, just checking.
Oh, I was like, that tracks. That tracks.
At any point,
wasn't somebody like pregnant during that challenge too?
Oh yeah, Leanne Wong was pregnant. Also, the whole Leanne Wong thing was like insane because it's like Leanne Wong was a producer on that show after she was on that show, and then they like dropped her in the middle of our season, and we're like,
what?
But she was a producer. She was the co-editor and producer of this show. Right. So it was like super weird, and she's pregnant, and we're in a snowstorm, and then it's like she gets kicked off, and it like the whole thing was like. Bananas.
Surreal. You know what I mean?
That ass. I didn't know she was a producer.
Oh, you mean she did it?
Oh man.
Yeah, they kind of glaze over that part.
Unbelievable.
And the only reason I knew that is because she was friends with Steph, and I met Leanne Wong years before New York when I was there with Steph, and we were hanging out, you know, whatever the hell we were doing. And she was like, "This is my friend Leanne. She's a culinary producer for Top Chef."
Oh man.
So she knew everybody on set. It was like wild. And it was like, yeah, it was like, it was a whole weird, it was a really weird thing.
Weird times abound in the mountains. Well, before we let you go, we have one question that we like to ask previous Top Chef alum. Nancy and I do a fun little segment on this show when we recap where we basically keep a running counter of every ingredient that we see pop up. So for instance, we're watching Seattle. This time around, we have
a lot of bacon.
How many bacons, Nancy? 17?
We're at like 21 bacons 17? In 15 episodes.
So we've seen a lot of bacon, but we're curious from, you know, your angle of things, your expertise. What ingredient do you think we might see a lot of on this upcoming season, season 22?
That's tough because it's Canada, so it's going to be, they're going to be moving. Because it's like you see a lot of ingredients too because where you're at matters. You know what I mean? Like they're not just like flying in shit from all over. You're getting what's at the Denver Whole Foods. You're getting what's at the Seattle Whole Foods or what they're stocking the pantry with. So the, you know, the judges will come and be like, all these dishes have bacon. But it's like, well, yeah, there's like six proteins in that fucking fridge. You know what I mean? Like we got to pick one. And there's 14 of us, you know? So like, I think the Canada one, I think it'll be, you probably won't see as much of that. You know what I mean? Because it's not so
that's
centrally
very
located. Where the other ones were much more centrally located. So it was like, sometimes it was just like, you know, and it's like you have a bunch of chefs. Like, we all know it's good. So if one person is like, oh, wow, the scallops are really good. Like, other people are probably going to figure out, like, the scallops are really good here.
Oh,
and we also all know, like, how long things take to cook. So it's like, we're like, oh, everybody's doing scallops. It's like, yeah, because nobody has time to fucking roast a whole turbo right now.
Yes. We've given shit, scallop. which is unfair. Yes, top scallop. We had a ceviche counter. We had an aqua chile counter. Same rules apply. It's sort of like easy. It's there. You can knock one out pretty quickly.
Right. Especially like a quick fire. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, ceviche, aqua chile. It's like 45 minutes is fucking nothing.
That's
when you have like nothing prepped and you're running around the kitchen and you're just like
45 is long for a quick fire.
Yeah, 45 is long for a quick fire, but I tell you, it goes
it
goes real quick.
We say from the couch. They have too much time. Go faster.
Make it shorter, make it harder. Well, okay.
Yeah.
To close us out, because you know, you've been so gracious and given us so much of your time. You've been on both sides of this table. And we've seen you again as a judge in seasons following the season that you won. Can you tell us just a little bit about the experience of being on the other side of that table? And I think if we saw correctly in the preview, you might be showing up in season 22.
I don't think so.
No, it said we saw an article saying you're on there. Anyway, regardless,
can you
just tell us a little bit about what it's like being on the receiving end and sort of how it – if it created like a full circle moment for you in your Top Chef experience, understanding how the food is judged versus how it's made.
It did. It was really cool. You know what I mean? Being on the other side of that is, you know what I mean? Insane. Like getting to sit on the other side of the table is so cool. And it's interesting to be a part of the conversations. And it's like to see what a back and forth it is and to see, you know, the disagreements and to see, you know what I mean? The way people felt about things. And, you know, so, gotten to, you know, that I've gotten to judge a couple times of like having back and forth. It was like, oh, I thought that fish was awesome. It's like, I thought that fish fucking sucked. Like, you know what I mean? Or like, you know, and it was kind of funny because, like, the first time I did it, me and Tom were talking about something. He's like, oh, I think they should have done this. I was like, nobody's fucking doing that, dude. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's a really, like, easy thing for you to say from here. But it's like, go back there, and it's like, you're going to be the guy who gets sent home for, like, cooking a whole alligator head. It's like, get the fuck out of here. You know, so it's like, that back and forth is, like, really fun. And it's just, you know, it's cool to see the other side. I think I always have a great appreciation for it and try to bring, you know, at least a little bit of, like, it's super stressful being over there. You know what I mean? You're just dealing, it's hard on the other side of that table. And, you know, your emotions are running super high, and just try to be like, hey, like, it's a big deal that you guys are here, period. But that's a really big deal. You put yourself out there on a massive scale. And there's, you know, so few people who ever get this opportunity. So, like, if, you know what I mean, you go home today, you win it all, like, you know what I mean, like, enjoy the moment. Like, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, it's so special, and it took, you know, so many people to get you here that it's like, they're going to freak out no matter what. I mean, they're going to be so happy you're on TV. They're going to think this is so incredible, you know, win, lose, or draw. They're just going to be so excited to see, you know, their cousin, sister, daughter, brother, whatever is on fucking TV. You know what I mean? So it's like, I try to, you know, bring a little bit of levity to the moment for them, because I feel like that gets lost sometimes. But it's all, I mean, it's an awesome opportunity when you get to do it, when you get to sit on the other side. It's super fun. It's super funny. And so, you know, something I hope I get to do again.
Amazing. I will never forget the image of you in the dinosaur, like, outfit coming on.
Oh, my God. I showed up and
talk
I was like,
a special what? Opportunity.
I was like, you know what I mean? I was like, really? You know, the woman who does all the, like, the dressing. I can't think
Charlotte,
of name,
friend of the pod.
Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Charlotte's a friend of mine, too, and, you know, despite how she dressed me for that. And I was like, really, Charlotte? Like, you fucking... is what you're doing to me?
Indiana oh Jones God, hat, really?
Yeah, oh she's God. Like, come on, it'll be fun. But I was like, all right, whatever.
We love a good brand partnership. We like love to wax poetic about it on here. We saw some. We had a real. What was it? The one we liked? The Reynolds wrap tinfoil. They knocked that one out of the park. That one was incredible.
Yeah, it's always, you know what I mean. Those things were hilarious, especially when you were in the interview. And they were like, when you say this, you have to say this. You can't say this. You know what I mean? So you're like, mm-hmm.
Don't say tinfoil or like Heinz.
Right. You know, whatever it is. We had, I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about this, but whatever. Like, we had Nutella was one of ours. And they were like, don't say, like, you weren't supposed to talk about, like, how much chocolate was in it or some shit like that. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, it's a hazelnut spread with just a hint of chocolate. You know what I mean? It's like just the right amount of chocolate. They're like, don't talk about it being too sweet. Don't talk. You know what I mean? There was all these Nutella rules. And so it was like, you know, it was just like fucking hilarious. You know,
the chocolate like, note is an interesting one because you're sort of like, it wouldn't, the sweet one I can get. That note I can understand. It's like, okay, mate, don't let it seem too sweet. But like chocolate is like, I wasn't going to tell you, I think you already know that. I don't know. Yeah, that's hilarious.
Right. It's not like there's not like awareness of what the fuck.
Yeah, it's also a defining feature of Nutella.
But they were like, don't just eat the Nutella out of the jar.
It's like, don't tell them it's smooth.
But I fucking want to. All right. Yeah. How about that? How about that, producer?
You're a Nutella truther. Big Nutella hates you.
Yeah, big Nutella's coming for me. You know what I mean? So,
oh, brother.
So if I go missing, it wasn't an accident. Look for the chocolatey hazelnut fingerprints all over the murder weapon.
But not too much chocolate.
Not too much.
Just the right amount. Just
mostly
touch.
Hazelnut.
Oh, my God. Mostly hazelnut. Not well, sweet.
Joe, thank you so much. It is truly such a joy to have you on the pod and to just even be able to get to talk to you. Thank you very much for everything that you did.
Oh, no. It was a pleasure. Ditto. This was super fun. You guys were absolutely great.
Well, the pleasure is all ours, and truly. We cannot wait to see whatever appearances may or may not be happening in the future, and we hope to continue to see you bless our screens and restaurants and plates and all of those good things. So thank you so much.
Right, yeah. Yay. Thank you so much, ladies. Have a great one.
Thanks, Joe.